We are on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says that Yayin Nesach Asur. That's not a very novel point. That's pretty obvious. Ve'oser b'chol shehu. Now this is more novel, but we've spoken about this a little bit. Now I have told you correctly, but not 100% the truth, that Yayin Nesach is oser when it falls in, if wine falls into wine, you know, if treif wine falls into kosher wine, no matter how little the amount of the treif wine is, it makes the wine all prohibited. So I've told you the truth, and then there's the halacha, but the issue is going to actually be debated in the Gemara at great length. Now, you're going to ask me, what's the debate to have? The Mishnah just said, Yayin Nesach is oser, and it's oser b'choshim, even the smallest amount. But we'll see that the Gemara, the Mishnah is going to explain a little bit, and then the Gemara is going to present that approach that you would just never have thought. I would never have thought reading the Mishnah, or perhaps never have thought, because I know what the halacha is, so I tend to forget this Gemara. Now the Mishnah explains, though. Yayin b'yayin, so yayin nesach in kosher wine.
Oser in what? Yayin nesach oser.
You mean what is it oser?
It is
oser to drink. Prohibited to drink and prohibited to get hanah, and oser, it prohibits other things, b'chol shehu, in the smallest amount. But now the Mishnah explains that yayin b'yayin, umayim b'mayim, if wine falls into wine, meaning yayin nesach falls into kosher wine, that's what we're going to read for now. The Gemara is going to introduce another possibility. Or, if water falls into water, now that's somewhat interesting. I didn't know that water requires a hashgacha. I didn't know that water could be treif. Now the answer is water could...
Seltzer.
Yes. Listen, I won't say which, but I have on good tradition that the Rav Michal Bernstein Zichron Lebracha, there was a particular hashgacha which he didn't consider trustworthy, and on Pesach he was makbid to use the seltzer that had no hashgacha rather than that one. So we generally assume that water doesn't actually require hashgacha. I think the OU will tell you, I think there are some waters that hashgacha, and the OU says, they'll tell the comments, you don't need hashgacha, but they want it because they think that people see the symbol, they think it's somehow healthier, it's better. Okay.
In Muncie, you always have hashgacha on the water. In
New York City, they need hashgacha on the water that comes from the tap because of the copepods. So, but the Mayim that's being spoken about in the time of Mishnah here is not that kind of mayim. It's actually what we might term meinesach. We know in the Beis HaMikdash, they typically used wine for libations, but there was one time of the year that they used water as well. That was Sukkos. You had the Nisuch HaYayin and the Nisuch HaMayim. And that's why, I mean, that's related to the fact that we say Geshem on Sukkos, because that's the season when the rain begins. So that's what the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, I think, says, B'chag nidonim al hamayim. On Sukkos, we're judged for what kind of water we're going to get, and that's tied in with the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim, which is done on some days, of different opinions of Sukkos. So you can have someone who would libate water to Avodah Zarah. So if you have Mayim in Mayim, or Yayin in Yayin, B'chol Shehu. So what it's saying is that this prohibition of Yayin Nesach, that it makes something else prohibited no matter how much falls in, that is when what we call Min B'mino, wine and wine, water and water. Then the Mishnah continues, Yayin b'mayim, umayim b'yayin. Now, let's say wine got mixed into water, or water got mixed into wine, b'no sein tam. Then, if the prohibited substance gives flavor, and let's for the moment say, shishim, 1/60th, if it gives flavor into the other substance, then it's aser. That's what b'no sein tam means. It's judged by whether it flavors, not b'chol shehu. Zeh klal. This is the rule. Min b'mino b'mashehu, v'shelo b'mino b'no sein tam. When you're dealing with the iser here, if it's the same, like falls into like, then no matter how much is aser. If it's min b'she'ein omino, then you follow the rules of nesin astam. The Amoraim are going to have a debate as to what the scope of this last rule is. Right? In our Mishnah, we're talking specifically about yayin nesach and about mayim of nesach. But the question is, how does that apply to all other prohibitions? And I mentioned this before, it's a machlokes, the Gemara attributes this as a machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, generally, whether Mimbimino is ever batel. Rabbi Yehuda believes that Mimbimino, there is no bittel, and the Chachamim say no, Mimbimino min ha-Torah is actually batel barov. You only need 51% or 50+% of kosher. And Midrabanan, they required shishim, they required 60 times. You know, the conceptual equivalent of something that would flavor if they had two different flavors, which they don't because they're the same substance.
What's the time of getting out of a dual scenario? Yayin b'mayim, umayim b'yayin. Could have said if these two liquids mix.
So there isn't, but you'll see it's very interesting in the Gemara's discussion that they're trying to tease out that question. And you can, there are two ways of reading this phrase of yayin b'mayim and mayim b'yayin. When we say yayin b'mayim, what do you assume the status of the mayim is, and what with the wine that falls into the water, what do you assume the status of this wine that the Mishnah is referring to is, and what's the status of the water? What would you say? Yayin esach falls into water, that's kosher. And then when the Mishnah says, mayim b'yayin, what would you say it means?
Right. I mean, it's water. Plain old water. Oh, no, it's got to be lime that's been lime. Yeah.
Ah, so you say mayin esach into yayin, that's kosher.
Right.
That is the way I would have read the Mishnah. It's the Gemara's conclusion. But let me suggest to you another possibility that, given everything that I've taught you, would never occur to you, which is, maybe the yayin is what's prohibited in both of these cases, or the mayim, pick which either substance. In other words, yayin b'mayim and mayim b'yayim are the same substance. It's either yayin of Isser and water of Heter, or yayin of Heter and water of Isser. And the Mishnah is saying that whether or not the wine falls into the water, or the water falls into the wine, it doesn't matter, it's still the same rule.
But water falling into wine, if it were impermissible water, wouldn't flavor the wine.
So this is a broader question that I, after, you know, having taught Yeridei many times, I still haven't figured out what exactly Nisin Astam means. In other words, what does it mean for water to flavor the wine? My guess would be, there are two possibilities. You could just use the rule of Shishim, which is a rule that we often use, and that's complicated for its own reasons. It's complicated because the way we paskin, it's a big machlokas harishonim, that the way we paskin, following the position of Tosfos and the Rambam, that as a matter of principle, Shishim plays no role when you're dealing with two things of different flavors, unless you don't have a way of tasting it. In other words, the Gemara speaks about having a non-Jew taste the food. So Ashkenazi practices, the Ramah says, we don't rely upon it at all. But in the Gemara, and the way the Mechaber paskins, if you can have a non-Jew taste the food, you really have to do so, and we don't care whether there's less than or more than a 60th. As long as there's a majority of Heter, and the guy says, I can't taste the Isser, it's Mutter. Right, so it's very hard to say in this case, we'll just ignore the taste question, we'll just follow Shishim. It's a very strange thing to say that, right? If you know it doesn't flavor it, it should really be permissible.
And you've got a different unit for each of these beverages. A small amount of wine will add flavor to a large amount of water. But it would take a much larger volume of water to affect the taste of a large quantity of wine.
So I think you're absolutely correct in that. So again, in the Mishnah, the notion of shishim as a measurement for being mevatel flavor of two different things doesn't exist in the Mishnah. The Mishnah only uses the term all over the place, b'no sein tam. The Amoraim are the ones who develop the rule of thumb of using shishim, and they know that it's kind of, for normal types of foods, it's kind of a maximal position. In other words, almost, there are things that flavor even less than a 60th. There are, you know, powerful flavoring agents. But on the most part, almost all prohibited foods, even the most strongest flavor is going to be no more than, you know, a 60th is going to be batel. Simple reading of the Mishnah, you're right, is that the no same tam differs between the two. I absolutely agree with that. If you want to make things, so the answer to the question might be, it might be numerically different. I think what Josh said is probably correct, that what it means for water to give flavor in the wine is to dilute the wine's taste sufficiently. And what he said is more correct than he might remember, because we gave Shear talking about the question of sherry casks and scotch. And one of the fascinating dinim, it's absolutely fascinating because it's not even just, it relates to taste, but it also sort of moves into the conceptual realm. The Psak Halacha of the Shulchan Aruch, and Ramosha relies upon this in his tshuva, is that if you dilute wine, six parts water, I don't know if it's six, or it's one-sixth, I don't remember, it's five parts water, one part wine, or six to one, what?
It was no longer wine.
It's not considered wine anymore, which is bizarre, and it appears the Halacha applies not only to Stam Yenam, Ramosha acknowledges, but it sounds like it applies to Yayin Nesach, which is wild, because what you're saying is, you have this thing that's prohibited min HaTorah, ba'achila, b'shtia, drinking it, ba'hanah, and you put enough water in, where you clearly, firstly, you're tasting, you can taste the wine, it has an impact, but somehow, it doesn't matter anymore. And you might say that at that point, you might call this no Saint Tam of Gam. At that point, it's so diluted that it's not a pleasant drink. But it's a strange, strange concept, right? The shear is not shishim the way it would be everything else. The shear is shisha. So in other words, there seems to be another thing at play. You're saying water doesn't put flavor in the wine. It does dilute the wine. And at a certain point, more so than other things, we would never say that if you had chaser schmaltz and you put in more than six parts water, I don't know, God knows what that would taste like, but, you know, that this would be permissible. Anybody would say that. So it's something unique in the category of wine. It's very odd then. So I think the answer is that the pshat and the mishnah and the sinas tam is not, you're correct, is not going to be the same proportion for both. But what it means for water to flavor wine means to dilute the wine to a point that the impact of the water is noticeable in the taste. Which is still, by the way, odd, because you're not tasting the water, you're tasting the effects of the water. Now again, that concept would mean that it might only be asur midrabbanan. For example, a yeast and rennet, what we call a davar hama'amid, something that transforms another substance. So let's say I take non-kosher yeast and I make bread with it. Can you taste the yeast in the bread? The answer is no. You can taste the effects of the yeast. It wouldn't taste like bread. It wouldn't have the sour taste of bread if the yeast hadn't started things out. But the yeast itself is batel in more than shishim. The same thing is true with rennet. You can't taste that. I'm sure none of us know what rennet tastes like. But rennet causes the milk to do something. It causes it to curdle and turn into cheese. So midrabanan, they say a davar hamamid is not batel. Why? Because bitul means we look at it as if the iser doesn't exist anymore. And it's hard to say that when you can't taste the rennet, you can't see the rennet, but you know, it's alive and well because you have cheese and not milk. So I don't know. So in other words, in that sense, you don't taste the water here, but you are tasting the effects of the water. But it's a larger question. Before, you know, I've always, there's a chumrah, the Shulchan Aruch believes, you know, the shayla that comes up with the onion. You chop an onion for your cholent with a milchik knife, and you didn't realize the knife was milchik. So because of a series of chumrahs that we have, even though everything's cold, because it's a sharp food, and because there's a knife there, so we say that the onion absorbs from the knife the milchiks, and even if the knife wasn't used in 24 hours, to, you know, add that then. And then if you threw it into your cholent, you have to figure out whether the flavor in the knife could actually be batel. According to the Mechaber and the Ramad, there's actually a very simple solution before you toss the onion in to the cholent, which is taste it. And according to the Mechaber and the Ramad, you can taste it. If you don't taste milchiks in the onion, and I'm pretty sure with our clean knives, I'm guessing you're probably not going to taste it, then it's absolutely 100% kosher. But yashu, you can throw it into the cholent. The Shach quotes, what's that?
There'll be no scenario where you can always taste the milk in any, right?
Well, if your knife had lots of butter on it, and it wasn't clean when you cut the onion, maybe you might taste the milk in it, right? It relates to stainless steel is not bolea. You know, many Rishonim hold this doesn't apply to onions. It applies to one din in the Gemara. Some say it doesn't even, if the knife is clean, it doesn't apply to anything. That's at least maybe not by the Korat Shochiltis that we learned about, Asafetita, which is the one thing it's clear in the Gemara it applies to. And this is one of the substances, radishes, but it might be in the radish Gemara in Chulin, if the knife is clean, according to Rashi's first interpretation, and he's shown him, you don't have to worry at all. So that's why, it's because the knife is clean, you're not going to taste anything. The bottom line is the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you're allowed to taste it, and if you taste it, and a Jew can taste it, because it's kosher, the only question is that milchiks are fleishiks, and then if you don't taste the milk, it's perfectly permissible to throw into the cholent. The Shach quotes, Chumra, some of the Achronim are uncomfortable, we don't rely upon Ti'im al-Chatchila. He does say that if you tasted the onion, and it had no milchiks, and you tossed it in, then it's not a problem. So it always bothered me, come on, why can't we taste things? And then, And then we recently acquired a sous vide machine, and it makes meat really, really well. And I want the first time that we cooked in it, I asked my wife, can you save the water? We cooked meat in it. I want to taste the water, because people have asked me, do you need, for those who haven't seen it, basically it looks like a, it looks like an immersion blender almost, one of those that you stick in, but instead it heats the heater. It heats the water to a constant temperature, and you wrap the food and you seal it in this like thick plastic, and you put it in the water once it reaches temperature, and you cook it for, depending on the thing, a couple of hours and so on, and it cooks very evenly. So people have asked me, do you need a separate sous vide machine for milchus and fleishigs? So forgetting about the sugya itself, which I'm not going to do, one thing I wanted to know in realia, does anything leak? Can you taste the food in the water? So I said, okay, I want to taste the water. We just made it in a chicken or meat. I want to taste the water. Do you taste anything? I taste the water, and I said, you know, I don't have I'm not a mumch in taste. You know, I'm pretty indiscriminate in most of the things that I eat. And so I realized, I really don't know what it would taste like in the water to taste a faint flavor. So I'm useless here, right? All of a sudden, I had deep sympathy for what the chumrah that the Shach quotes that I don't rely upon to eat. Sometimes I can taste food and taste the tasting, but I realized that tasting is a little more, it's a little complicated. You know, there are some people, correct. I didn't have a control, and so on. It was like, your brain plays tricks on you. It doesn't taste exactly like water should taste. Why? Is because the water was heated? I don't know.
It can be blinded also.
Right. So it's really, tasting is a little more complicated than I wanted to admit until I realized that it's sort of like, okay, it was a little humbling. And again, many of you may have finer taste buds and maybe justifiably more confident in your tasting. So I'm not really sure, you know, when you talk about what does it mean to taste something.
Isn't that the whole point of taste, as opposed to like some mechanical prescribed quantification of bottling, that taste like gives over the halakhic reality to the arbiter in question? If that's you, if it's somebody else.
There's a machlokas harishonim when the Gemara in Chulin talks about kfela, talks about that tzadi zayin amad aleph in Chulin. So the Gemara there, when it describes, uses the term kfela. Give it to a kfela to these. What's a kfela? So Rashi says a kfela is a nachtom, is a cook, a baker, someone who's a professional. So some Rishonim say, so the Rashba says immediately, what the Gemara says the following, I think Rava had said, I always used to wonder, the Mishnah always says Beno Saint Tom. So there's a Mishnah, a Braisa, that says that if you cook chulin in a pot that was used for truma, so Harez de Beno Saint Tom. It depends whether you can taste the truma or not. And if you cook basar in a pot that was used for chalav, so it's Beno Saint Tom. So Rava said, I always used to say that I understand bishlama truma, you give it to a kohen to taste. But what do you do with a pot of basar b'chalav? How do you know whether you can taste it in it? But now that I heard Rabbi Yochanan say that samchin and akfela, that you can use a non-Jew, you can use a kfela, so now I say that's how you taste by a basar b'chalav case. So the Rashba says, from the fact that the Braisa, that Rava says, yitamenu kohen, and he doesn't say kohen kfela, some expert, it means tam hanirgash l'stam b'nei adam is considered tam. But other Rishonim say no, that it dafka has to be a kfela. Right? The Rashba says, kfela is mentioned by the Gemara, one of the explanations, because a kfela, because he's professional, we're not concerned he's going to lie to you. Even though a guy might not have nemanos, but a regular guy would have to be mesiach lepitumo. He doesn't know that he's giving you a heter, what he's talking about, because otherwise we're afraid he'll lie. Whereas a kfela, we're not afraid, even though he knows what the stakes are, because he's a professional. If he lies to you, and then you taste it, and you taste the kosher food, the non-kosher food, you're going to tell people he's going to lose his professional reputation, right? A chazaka, that uman lomera umanase. A professional doesn't want to undermine his professional reputation. So, but that's what the Rashba says. But some Rishonim say, no, you need a kfela. Sounds like from Rashi, it has to be a kfela. That you need someone who has some type of bekias. So, the Shulchan Aruch, again, Ashkenaz and the Rama says we don't rely upon a guy at all. The way the Mechaber paskins is that it would appear that you can use a kfela, and it doesn't matter whether he knows or doesn't know why you're asking him, and a regular non-Jew has to not know. He has to be Mesech Levituma. So you're right. In the end, we really don't require a professional. But I feel like my taste buds might be dumber than even Stam B'nai Adam, so I'm just uncomfortable saying, you see, you don't taste it in the thing. Okay.
To make it individual is problematic even from a practical perspective, right? Because every person could be different, and not, in other words, their taste, their sensitivity to taste, especially as you get older,
we were discussing this week. You know, we raised this question of what happens if one person can taste it and one person can't taste it. And it appears to me, I'm sure that Midrash Rabbanan, we'd say nobody's allowed to eat it, but I would argue it's probably the case that Minat Torah, one person might be allowed to eat it, one person won't be allowed to eat it, because the prohibition is getting hana shel te'ima from food, I'm not sure. Right? There's a lot of lumdus that could but you might have to deal with first. It's really complicated, so I haven't quite figured out. Maybe I'm grateful that the Ramah said we don't use kvel anymore. We use shishim, and the Shach said don't bother tasting it. You know, b'dieved we can rely upon it, so it makes my life easier.
Did Sfardim practice?
I have not asked any Sfardim, but that would be interesting to ask them. You know, again, today I suspect it comes up a lot less often today. Because most of our food, the only time it comes up today, I think, generally is basa b'challah, because we don't have non-kosher food around the house, generally speaking. For those who keep kosher, excuse me, your meat comes, you know, as my wife said, she likes her. I have students who do shechita, and have volunteered when we have a shir barbecue to actually bring fresh meat, and my wife has said, I like my chicken coming from the supermarket in plastic wrap. So I'm sure they do shechita in the backyard. I wouldn't mind, but okay. And so the bottom line is, as my wife says, she knows far more Torah than her grandmother did, but her grandmother knew how to prepare kosher chicken, you know, where she wouldn't even know what to do with it, to salt it, etc. So the bottom line is that the only type of iser that generally is ever going to come into the house would be basar b'chalav. And most, and it's where, look, people do occasionally bring shayos. They use the wrong utensil. Thank you. I'm pretty sure that if we did a taste test, we would never, with our utensils, you know, against stainless steel and glass, do not absorb at all. And so we probably wouldn't taste anything, but I don't know what Sfardim actually do. But the Sfardim, I would be surprised if they wouldn't, in fact, rely upon kvela. I jokingly say, I told my students when we discussed this, I said, it used to be on my block in Teaneck, you know, if I were a Sfardim, it wouldn't have been a problem to ask a non-Jewish neighbor to taste it. But now, you know, it's like with a Shabbos guy also, like I know there's probably more, but I only have one non-Jewish, you know, family, a person on the block at this point, so it's probably easier in the city to find the Shabbos guy than it is right now in many parts of Teaneck. So, okay. Anyway. Okay. So again, the way I would have read the Mishnah, which is the way Lenny was reading the Mishnah, which is might be the way we do read the Mishnah in the way we paskin, is when the Mishnah says, Mayim b'yayin and yayin b'mayim, the first one is Isser, and the second one is Heter. And they're two different scenarios, not two different orders, but two different scenarios. Wine that's Usser falling into water that's Mutter, water that's Usser falling into wine that's Mutter. And in both cases, the rule is, it's Beno Saint Tom. Okay. Now the Gemara states the following, and we're going to have a series. Well, you know, before we do this, I want to talk about one issue which is very important to Halacha Lamaisa, which is the position of Tosfos. Position of Rabbeinu Tam. And this is going to be one more case where you have a machlokas of Rabbeinu Tam and other of the Balei HaTosfos as to how to justify a certain leniency where Rabbeinu Tam follows his standard method and the Balei HaTosfos follow their standard method. I don't know if these cases, this is not an everyday case, but the basic claim that Rabbeinu Tam is going to make is that Yayin Nesach is not batel, is Oser v'mashehu, is only Yayin Nesach. It does not apply to Stam Yenam. In other words, a wine that a guy touched, but you know, you have no reason to assume he libated, is batel b'shishim, like all other Isur. Follows all the same rules. And since we happen to paskin outside of Yayin Nesach, and Teva, we paskin that min bimino is batel. I mentioned before, it's a machloka satanaim, whether there's ever bittel of two things of the same flavor. Rabbi Yehuda's position is no. It's based upon something that's coming up in a few weeks on Yom Kippur. The Torah says that after the Kohen Gadol sprinkled the dam of the par, of the bowl, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and sprinkled the blood of the goat, of the Aes, of the Sarei Lashem inside, and then he sprinkled them on the outside of the Paroches itself in the Kodesh, and then he was supposed to take the two together, mix them, and put them on the golden altar that was still inside the Heichal. So the Torah says, V'lakach midam haparu midam ha-sa'ir, v'nasana karnos ha-mizbeach sa'vavi. You should take from the blood of the par and the blood of the sa'ir and put around the corners of the mizbeach. So the Gemara says that it's goli v'yadua, that dam ha-par is merubim midam ha-sa'ir. I'm going to translate not literally, but it's obvious that the two amounts of blood from the par and the sa'ir are not going to be the exact same amount. And if you mix them together and blend them, so at that point, one of the two substances should be mevatel the other. And yet the Torah says, V'lakach midam hapar u'midam ha-sa'ir. So even though you mix them, the blood of the par is still there, and the blood of the sa'ir is still there. And obviously, Rabbi Yehuda concludes from that, that min b'mino is not batel. Because if min b'mino were batel, you would either have dam hapar, or you'd have dam ha-sa'ir, but you wouldn't have both. The Chachamim disagree, and they say what you learn from that is that olin are not mevat lezozo. Two things brought on the Mizbeach mixed together, there is no bittul. But outside of the kachim, outside of things put on the Mizbeach, the Chachamim hold min bibino is in fact batel, midaraisa in the majority, midarabanan they required 60. And that is the way ultimately we paskin. So Rabbeinu Tam and the Baal Ha'it Tosfos say that the only time we say that Yayin Nesach is oser b'mashehu is when it's really Yayin Nesach. But if it's Stam Yenam, then it's not a problem. And well, let's read the Tosfos. Perush Rabbeinu Tam, it's the second Tosfos on the page. D'davko Yayin Nesach mamish, shenisnaseich lavodas kochavim hu dahave b'mashehu. Avos Stam Yenam is b'shishim. And what that means, in effect, when you're living in Ashkenaz, is what wine was actually libated to Avodah Zarah? And the answer was essentially none. Certainly no wine. I would argue that there would have been one source of bona fide Yayin Nesach, and that would have been the wine used for the Eucharist. But I assume that that wine, once it entered the church, didn't leave the church. That wasn't getting mixed into anybody else's wine. And therefore, basically, what this means, if you accept Rabbeinu Tam's position, is that in medieval Ashkenaz, there was no Yayin Nesach that was Oseh B'Mashehu, because there was no real Yayin Shenisnaseich Avodas Kochavim. And he says, "V'chein maga oveid kochavim, even if it's a Jew's wine that a guy touches, is also not a problem. Dumya d'mayim, d'bimayim, mayim mayri she'edua shenisnachlu avodas kochavim." He's making an argument that within the Mishnah, what kind of mayim is the Mishnah talking about? Is it talking about mei nesach or stam mayim?
Right.
And he says, there's no such thing as stam mayim. Stam mayim is assumed to be mutter. We assume that goyim run around every opportunity to be mishachshech, to splash the wine for the zara. They don't do that to water. So when the Mishnah talks about yayin b'mayim, mayim b'yayin, mayim b'mayim, it's obviously real mei nesach. It's not stam mayim. So if that's real mei nesach, so then, same thing by yayin. The ibis stam mayim leka iser. There is no iser. The kavase katani yayin sheyadu and esnasa chabodas kochadim. Therefore, by analogy, if the water the Mishnah is talking about has to be real mei nesach, because there is no such thing as stam mayim, then the yayin that the Mishnah is talking about is also yayin nesach. Aval stam yenam have b'shishim afilu min b'mino kmo kol isurin shebetor. So now. Rabbeinu Tam is going to be bothered, Tosfos is going to be bothered by a passage in the Tosefta, which suggests that even when it's not real Yayin Nesach, it's Oseh B'Mashehu. So, he gives a kvetch of an answer. I don't want to read that right now. And if you skip down to a few lines, about six lines from where I just stopped, the line begins with V'od Omeri. V'od Omeri, even if you want to say that from the perspective of the Gemara, Stam Yenam also is B'mashehu, just like real Yayin Nesach, afilu hachi have a Stam Yenam bizman hazeh b'shishim. Today, in medieval Ashkenaz, it's only b'shishim. Even though in the time of the Gemara, Stam Yenam was oser b'mashehu. Why? The dafka b'bei atanayim v'amorayim, they were experts. They understood exactly what their theology was, understood what they were doing. Then it was osur. It's relevant to have nisuch. Then the Gemara was machmir, like yayin nesach mamish. Hilkach le'inin bitel kishari surim dami ubatel b'shishim kamo. I'm sorry, skip. No, that's what he says. So what the second answer, what the Ri is saying, is the same conclusion as Rabbeinu Tam, but it's a totally different approach, right? This is classic. We've seen this at the first Tosfos in the Masechta was like this. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't want to say we're different. So Rabbeinu Tam comes up with new readings of passages in the Gemara, with clever interpretations to say, this doesn't apply. You misunderstood. Right? You thought that Yayin Oser Nayinesa Oser B'Mashehu was actually all Yayin like Stam Yenam because we're not distinguishing. No, Yayin Esach in the Mishnah means literally Yayin Esach, and the proof of that is the Mayim in the Mishnah is Mayin Esach. And when he deals with the Tosefta, he explains the Tosefta in a very odd way. So there's no evidence whatsoever, according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's no evidence that anything in the Gemara, where they talk about being Oseh B'Mashehu, is actually anything but Yayin Nesach. I mean, it's not explicit that it's Yayin Nesach, but there's no evidence that Stam Yainim, according to the Gemara, was Oseh anything more than 1/60. And the Rish says, okay, but you know what? That Tosef is difficult. The Gemara doesn't say anything. So it appears from the Gemara, they don't distinguish between Yayin Nesach and Stam Yainim. It's all Oseh B'Mashehu. But we live in a different world. Our guy, they didn't know anything about Avodah Zarah. They're not real Avodah Zarah. You know, Rabbi Yochanan, we learned early in the Masechta, says that Ovdei Avodas Kochavim B'chutz La'aretz, they're not real Ovdei Avodas Kochavim. It's Minhag HaMasein B'Yadayim. Right? Our guy, they don't know B'tiv Nisuch of Yayin. So the Gzeira doesn't apply to us. Rabbeinu Tam strenuously works to avoid doing that. But the Baalei Tosos, you know, are not so reluctant. The first Tosos in our Masechta was dealing with the problem. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to do business with idolaters on the day of their festivals and 3 days before. And even though we live in Chutz La'aretz, and the Gemara says in Chutz La'aretz that Rabbi Yochanan said they're not real idolaters, so only the day of the festival is prohibited. But Tosa says Sunday is Yom Edom for the Christians. That is their idolatrous day every week. How do we do business with them on Sunday? So the Baalei HaTosos, most of them say, we live in difficult circumstances, our economics, we couldn't survive without it. I don't remember, some maybe say, our Goyim are a little different, even though they're with the Zara, but they don't know. Rabbeinu Tam says no, and I don't remember which direction it was, but when the Mishnah says, Asur Laseis for Laseis Imahem, Rabbeinu Tam, now we normally would say it means to do business. I buy from you, I sell from you, I sell to you. Rabbeinu Tam says no. Laseis, thin aleph tough, and Lases, tough, to carry and to give means, I pick up the object and I give him the money. Lases es adava, the lases lo es akesem, which is wild. I'm pretty certain that phrase never means that anywhere else in rabbinic literature. Masa umatan means doing business, exchanging, back and forth. Right? But whether you think, however strange you may think Rabbeinu Tam's reading is, that highlights his approach to deal. He does not want to say we're different, that the Gzera doesn't apply to us for whatever A, B, C, D, E, F, G. He doesn't want to say that. He wants to say, you read the Gemara wrong, you have to go back and read the Sugya. And the other Baalei Tosos wants to say, no, we're living under extreme circumstances, we're living under different circumstances, and therefore these things don't apply to us.
How does he explain
Laseis for Laseis? See, he only has it one-sided. I imagine the Jews were selling stuff to them. I don't remember, but so it means what the Mishnah prohibits is... let's assume, it doesn't matter which way it goes. If the Jews, for the most part, were selling, they were merchants selling to Goyim on Sunday, so Mishnah only prohibited buying from them, which is to give them the money and to pick up the object. Right? But it doesn't prohibit to sell to them. That was, you know, which is sort of like, wow. Right? That's a very, very creative reading. But that's Rabbeinu Tam's hallmark. It's just over and over. And I'm amazed. I'm sure scholars have said this. But as I've mentioned this to my students many times, it's not only in Avodah Zarah. My favorite example, for many reasons, is the business of not getting in a boat. I didn't talk about it. Not getting in a boat 3 days before Shabbos. Right? There's a Tosefta, I think in Shabbos, it's quoted in the first parak, says you can't get in a boat. Ema fliga misfina gimel yom kodem haShabbos. What reason does the Gemara give? The answer is none. None whatsoever. The Gemara just says that l'dvar mitzvah, it's mutter. If it's a mitzvah, you're allowed to do it. Now, this is a fascinating example where even the Sfardi Rishonim are defending the Minhag Yisrael because Jews were doing this. So you have like six different interpretations of what the Gemara actually means there. Rashbam says it's Beis Shammai's position, we don't paskud like it. But there are five other interpretations of giving different reasons. You might get seasick because of Onik Shabbos. You might have to be Michal Shabbos to save your life. You're putting yourself in that position. Rabbeinu Hananel says it only is because you're going outside the Tchum. So if the water is deeper than 10 Tfachim and you get on the boat, it's not a problem because there's no Tchum above 10 Tfachim. Every reason which is designed to defend Minhag Yisrael. Every one of those is finding the reason for the Gzeira and saying the reason happens not to apply to our situation. Rabbeinu Tam comes along and says, no. He says, the Gemara says it's mutal dvar mitzvah. Business is a dvar mitzvah. You know what dvar rishus is? Going on a pleasure cruise. I don't know how many Jews in the time of the Gemara. Going boats was dangerous, right? Going boats was really dangerous. How many people went on a pleasure cruise? It was always business, you know, whether it was diplomacy or was it parnasa. But Rabbeinu Tam says dvar mitzvah is mutter. Is he correct? You can't argue that the Gemara says that dvar mitzvah is mutter. He says pragmatia, business is dvar mitzvah. Right? But again, it's not that they all the Rishonim get to the same conclusion. But how does Rabbeinu Tam get there? Not by saying our circumstance is different. The Gzeira doesn't apply to us because X, Y, Z. It was because of that. No, he reads the Gemara. It was never also in the first place. You misread the Gemara. That's, that is, I've seen over and over, that seems to be Rabbeinu Tam's hallmark. That's the way, again, they all know, Minag Yisrael in certain types of cases has to be defended, and the question is, how do you go about defending it? Rabbeinu Tam is not willing to concede historical circumstances have changed. Rabbeinu Tam says, you misread the Gemara. Yes, Sam?
What happens if the guy is not an idolater who doesn't simply know how, you know, the theology of idolatry? Let's say he's a monotheist. You know, he doesn't believe, he really isn't, the guy is a monotheist. Shouldn't there be like an Arab, for a Muslim, for example?
So the Ran here says that this entire discussion, he disagrees with Tosos. Not surprisingly, the Ran is living in Spain. Right? It's not an issue for them. What the Ran says, I don't think is a chiddush. But of course, the Ran had no problems in Spain when you deal with Muslims, because a Muslim touching wine makes it usur to drink, but not usur b'hana. And the Ran says that the only time, and this is very plausible, the only time yayin nesach is usur b'mashehu is when it's usur b'hana. If it's only a yayin that's usur b'shasiya, so then it would be mutter. And it happens to be, by the way, in Ashkenaz also, they argued the Ramah has a kula. Some of the Balei Tosfos that Stam Yainam was Mutar B'Hana, right? But that was really an Ashkenaz, and Rama himself is, it clearly was the Minhag. Jews were wine merchants, and they had to deal with non-Jewish wine. Rama doesn't love it, but it does seem to be Minhag Ashkenaz. The Ran would not have agreed with that, probably, but in Spain, when you were dealing with Muslims, at least, that was the Halacha. That's pretty clear. That I don't think is controversial. That a monotheist, a non-Jewish monotheist who touches the wine, you can't drink it, but you're allowed to get Hana, which means and that saying is Batal B'Shishim is not so difficult.
Even if he's an atheist, he's not a...
Okay, but Sam, that's
no,
the same thing.
No, because now in America, how many... Where do we have pagans?
No, I agree. I agree. Yeah. I, most certainly... No, so I think, again, we would say, again, for the Ramah, it wouldn't matter. I think Sfardim would say that Christians touching it in America is still a problem because they're not strictly monotheists. They would say if it was only concerned about Muslim, or maybe someone who was an atheist, a Hanami, you couldn't drink it, but you'd be allowed to get Hana from it.
Why couldn't he have just said that the Mishnah would have said the edge case if it was Stam Yenim? It would have said Stam Yenim Asur.
So the reason why I'll peep shot Rabbeinu Tam, this position is difficult, and the reason why all the Chachmei Sfarad are going to disagree, not just because they didn't need the cool, it wasn't relevant to them, is that the Mishnah has gone throughout, the Mishnah hasn't distinguished between Yayin and Stam Yenim. The Gemara virtually never distinguishes between the two. It's a very strained position to say that Stam Yenim is Mutar B'Hana, which is not what's being argued here, and equally strained to say that the rules of Bittul somehow don't apply to Stam Yenim, which is Asur B'Hana.
Right.
Right, so you're right, the Mishnah doesn't give you what you're asking. Why does the Mishnah give you the liminal
thing.
Case? What's that?
It's a linguistic thing.
I would say, right, a linguistic, but I would say more broadly, the Mishnah just never bothers to distinguish between the two, and the Gemara is always treating them the same. To all of a sudden say, so you're right, the Mishnah could have been more explicit in giving you the liminal case, but it doesn't, because it just, it never talks in those terms.
Right.
Okay, fine. So that is the first stage. Now the Gemara is going to deal with, well, actually, so your question, Lenny. And I'm sure that by the time I'm finished teaching, I say maybe I should have talked, but I generally don't teach this Gemara when I'm teaching Yerideya, because the Maskana makes it irrelevant to, you know, anything we're doing. I just tell my students that we learn that different things have a different shear vittel, and shishim is the norm, but there are certain substances that when you're dealing with minbimino have higher threshold. Truma requires 100 minbimino, Orla and Kilaya Kerem require 200, and Yayin Nesach has no bittel, and Tevel have no bittel at all. So you read the Gemara, Ki Asir Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yochanan, and we're going to get three or four opinions of Amoraim who came from Eretz Yisrael, bringing a tradition in the name of Rav Yochanan. Four different opinions. Ki Asir Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yochanan, Hama'ara Yayin Nesach Mechavis Labor. If someone is pouring Yayin Nesach from a barrel into the bor, into the vat, which presumably, in this case, has to be permissible wine. So I'm pouring non-kosher wine into kosher wine, and he says from a chavis, a barrel. A barrel is not tiny. A barrel is not the biggest item either. So he says, afilu kol hayom kulo, rishon, rishon, batel.
Have you learned about this before?
No, I don't think this. We might have encountered something similar, but this is kind of wild. This is wild on two levels. You read this and you say to me, number one, forget that I'm pouring wine of Yayin Nesach all day into the vat of kosher wine. As soon as I pour a drop in, it should all be awesome. That's problem number one. Problem number two is, how much do I end up pouring in?
It's a
all day. More. I can have more, correct. It's wild. It's absolutely wild. But as I explain to my students, the Ravid's position, the Ravid has two interesting positions. Position number one, the Ravid has, is that this is not so interesting. You're not allowed, we mentioned before, you're not allowed to intentionally nullify Isser. In other words, I can't take a pot of kosher meat and I need a little extra volume in it. You know, it's very carefully apportioned. So I'll mix in the kazayas or tuv chazi, which you won't be able to taste, but it will make the pot larger and I have enough food to serve my guests. That maybe that's why I would do it. You're not allowed, or let's say chazir fell in and there wasn't enough meat. So I'll toss more meat in to be mevatel the chazir, right, to make sure the tam is batel. You're not allowed to do that. It's called ein mevatlin isur lechatchila. If it happens post facto, we apply bittel. Because it happened. Now, most Rishonim say it's probably only rabbinically prohibited to do that. And all the Ravid says it's prohibited with the Raisa, but I think all Rishonim say that once you went ahead and did it, the prohibition of the person who did it or the person for whom it was done benefiting is only rabbinic in nature. I mean, if I went ahead and I poured, I could, minat Torah, according to most Rishonim, I could be mevatel the chazer on purpose to increase the volume. Or if it fell in, I could add in order to be mevatel it. Now, that's position number one. Let's ignore the Ravid there. Let's take Tosis' position there. Now the Ravid has a very interesting position where this is one of the major gemaras this might be the source for. Let's say a piece of chazir. Let's take a simple case first. Simpler case. I have a little bit of, treif ground beef that gets mixed into my pot of kosher ground beef, and I have shishim. So the halacha is it's batel. What happens if, after it's batel, a little more ground beef falls in? And a little more ground beef falls in. Now, I know. So the question is, so here in that case, midor raisa, what's that? Non-kosher.
Falling in.
Now, midaraisa, for sure it's clear that until I get a majority of non-kosher meat, it would be permitted. You can ask midarabanan, once I have now more than a 60th of a non-kosher meat, how do we look at this? And you can ask the midaraisa, let's say you now have a majority of non-kosher meat that fell in and dribbled, drip, 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 drop, 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 what's the status? Now, the Gemara in Bechoros, and Tosus quotes it here, and probably, God willing, next week we'll talk about this, talks about the concept of chazra v'neora, that Isser can be batel, but then it can turn around and wake up. If you want the most extreme manifestation of the sheet, this is the most one of the funnest sugyas to teach in Yeridea, and I've talked about this here. One piece of treif salami gets mixed into two pieces of kosher salami. So we say that there's bittel, even with Rabbanan. And for sure, al pidin, the Silvermans can eat one piece of meat. But the rush goes so far as to say that one person can take the three pieces, put them on one sandwich of club, put a little mustard, a little pickles on it, do you like ketchup, and eat it at the same time. Because the rush says that Isser is nepach lios heter. Bittel doesn't just mean it's a statistical probability when I'm eating that it's kosher. It means the Isser's transformed heter. That's wild, but it gets wilder. But then the rush says, but if now two more pieces of non-kosher beef fall into it, the rush says, Chazra v'neora, the Isser wakes up, which is wild, because you just said the Isser has been metaphysically transformed to heter. But that is the rush's position. So that the question that's being discussed here, leave aside that case, because that's a case of yavish b'yavish. Each of the pieces is sort of discrete. But it is a case where they blend. The Ravid's position seems to be that what you don't say, Chazra v'neora by Isser. Now, it's a little less wild when you're talking about treif ground beef and the kosher ground beef, even when you get past the majority point, because you could say, when the first kezias falls in, and it's less than a 60th, both the midrabban and midaraisa, the isser is transformed to heter, and once it becomes mutter, it never becomes asser again. But what's wilder is, it seems the Ravid says it even by mimbishay nomino, two things of different flavors. In which case, the chazer, fall piece falls in, I have 60 times you can't taste it, so it's all mutter. Now another piece of chazer falls in. Now, at some point, you're going to taste the chazer, and yet according to the Ravid, it's going to be kosher pork. And you're going to be tasting the flavor, and this is the limit, which is wild. Absolutely wild. By min b'mino, you can sort of understand it. By min b'sheino mino, it's very difficult. We don't paskin like the Ravid. I pointed out to my students that if you really held like the Ravid, you come to the ridiculous conclusion that, except for, he holds you're not allowed to be mevatel isur lechatchila, minat Torah. Although, minat Torah, once you did it, it's batel. But if you discount one position in the Ravid, which we do, but you would adopt the other position, it turns out that my solution to dealing with all non-kosher food is to just drop it in piece by piece. And you can make everything kosher that way. Can't be. Anyway, so coming back here, the problem we're confronting is that as you start to, as the wine is being poured in, it sounds like afilu kol hayom kulo. Afilu kol hayom kulo, it's actually going to be mutter, which is wild, which is absolutely wild.
I remember we're talking about pouring, and if it was a continuous stream, then the whole...
Oh, the gas.
It was something, and I don't remember.
So your question is a good one, but I don't think we've spoken about it in this context. You're talking about nitzo kechibor, whether the stream in between causes it to be touching. Yeah. It starts out in the Mishnah. We spent some time last couple of weeks we were talking about this because it came up again in last Gemara. But even if you didn't intend this, you are speaking something very important here, because this is the way a lot of Rishonim claim. The Ravid claims here that when we say Hama'arem Yechavis Labor, you can't be pouring straight. You have to be doing this. It has to be a drop at a time. Each drop has to first be Bata. When you have a continuous stream, it's as if it fell in all at once, and then you need enough to be Mavatel the entire barrel, which you might not have. So that's a discussion that's going to come up here. Other Rishonim don't seem to require that. I don't know why. I would seem to be what the Ravid says is intuitive. If it falls in at once, if it's a continuous pour, that should be considered falling at once. But we don't have to concern ourselves for that for now. But this is what Redimi claims, that Rishon is Batel. And Rashi writes, if you look at Rashi, Rishon, Shenofal is Batel, Berov, Ayayin Kasher, Shebebar, Umutter bana, it's permissible bana. So Rashi makes it sound like you can't drink it. V'haide katani l'kaman, yayin nesech shenafa labar kulo aser, it's completely aser. Moki la kishenafa b'chavis gedola v'nishpura v'nafa kulo ka'achad. So that's the case, right? If the barrel smashes, that it all falls in one instance, so then it's not batel. So Rashi doesn't say you have to pour it in little drips. He allows a continuous flow, but if the barrel literally falls in at once, again, how you define continuous flow, we'll see the Gemara may actually sort of introduce that question a little bit. Okay. So now, the Gemara says the following. Tanan, yayin nesech aser v'oser b'chol shehu. Mishnah seems to be straightforward. My lav, the kanafal isura lego hetera. That the iser, yayin, falls into yayin. And it's oser b'mashehu. So Rav Dimi will answer, lo, the kanafel hetera lego isura. It's the exact opposite. It's heter falling into the iser, and as the heter falls in, drop by drop, it becomes batel in the iser. So that's how you read the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, listen, Lenny, I want to say that I brainwashed you, because I've been talking about this all along to say it's oseb mashu, but you could read the Mishnah the opposite way, right? You don't have to, we don't in the end, but that's what the Gemara is suggesting for Rav Dimi. So now the Gemara says, toshma, Yayin b'mayim b'no saint tam. So that's the second part of the Mishnah. If wine falls into water, not the same, not min b'she'eno b'no, the rule is if you can taste it, it's aser. My lav, the kanaf al chamra de isura l'mayad atera, is it not that prohibited wine falls into permissible water? Lo, the kanaf al chamra de atera l'mayad isura. No, it could be the same situation. It can be that kosher wine falls into treif water. So now the Gemara... Now, once you say that yayin b'mayim is kosher into treif, what does it mean when the Mishnah says the next two words, umayim b'yayin? So the Gemara, that you could have gone two ways, but now the Gemara suggests, but umidiresha b'maya d'isura, if the first of these two cases, wine into water, is prohibited water, meinesach, then seifanami b'maya d'isura. Then presumably, the next two words is also mayim of isur, v'katani seifa, mayim b'yayin b'no saint tam. Right, okay, fine, I'll let you read it that way, that it's permissible wine into prohibited water. Now when it says water into wine, that means prohibited water into permissible wine. The same two substances, and the Mishnah is telling you whether A falls into B, or B falls into A, it's been no same time. So don't you see that you don't say comma batil when the iser falls into the heter? So the Gemara says no. Seifa the kanaf al maya, the I'm sorry. Amalocha Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi would say to you, "Kula mas nisan heter legoi sura." The entire pattern of the Mishnah is heter falling into iser. The reisha, the first case, is the kanaf al chamra de tera lemaydi sura. Mutter wine into aser water. Sefer the kanaf al maya de tera lechamra di sura. Mutter water into aser wine. So he would say the entire pattern of the Mishnah is iser, is heter falling into iser, and you say kama kama batil on the on the Isser. Only if the on the heter. But if the Isser were to be falling into the heter, Rav Dimi would say it would be mutter because kama, kama batel. So this is obviously a completely, completely different understanding than anything we've been working with until now. Okay, let's read one more line. Well, let's look at Rashi for a second, actually. Rashi writes, Amar lecha Rav Dimi, kula mas nisan hater goi sura. Rashi writes that the Resha is my, he explains, Resha Maya di Surah, the Sefer Maya de Terah. Not the way you thought, that it's A into B, B into A, but no, they're actually two different substances in each case. It, in other words, in one case the water is the mutter, and in the other case the yayin is the mutter. Then Rashi says the following, V'ein halacha k'ravdimi, we don't paskal k'ravdimi, Share ba Rabbi Yitzchak v'hechmir, ba Ravin v'hechmir, ulekaman paskinan yayin esech b'mino b'mashum. So Rashi just wants to alert you already that we don't paskin this way. We're going to see, we're going to read just one more line now, and then, because it's similar to Rav Dimi, it's conceptually the same but slightly different in detail, that's the next one of Yitzhak, but then Ravin's going to come along with a totally different interpretation of what Rav Yochanan said with respect to the Mishnah, which is going to introduce some new ideas. So what does Rav Yitzhak say? Ki asa Rav Yitzhak by Yosef, when Rav Yitzhak by Yosef came from Eretz Yisrael, bearing Rabbi Yochanan's Torah, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Hama'ara Yayin Esach Mitzirtzur Kat on the bar, Afilu Kol Hayom Kulo Rishon Rishon Batel. If you have a small tzirtzur, in other words, all he's arguing about is what is the flow of the wine. He says that a chavis is too much wine, that's considered as if it fell in at once. You need to have a much smaller vessel, so the amount of wine that's coming into out of Isser, that's coming into the bar at a given time is a much smaller amount. Then he'll say, like Rav Dimi, that Rishon Rishon Batel. But Vedavka Tzirtzur Katan Delo Nafesh Amudei. It doesn't have such a wide flow. Aval Chavish the Nafesh Amudei Lo. But if it's a barrel where there's so much more wine, the flow of wine is much thicker, then in that case it would be awesome. And we would say it's like it fell. It's like the barrel. It just smashed, and in one instant actually fell into the wine, and that you can't say kama kama batel. You have to measure actually what fell in against what was there. Okay, so these first two answers, though, as I said, they agree conceptually that kama kama is batel. The question that they are arguing about is what is called falling bevasachas versus what is called kama kama batel. Okay, so we'll stop here, and next week, Be'ezras Hashem, we will resume with a very, very different approach to dealing with Rabbi Yochanan's statement. And on our own, we never said Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said something, and the Amoraim are bringing different traditions, but the next versions of Rabbi Yochanan will be much less novel in terms of what they're actually permitting, although they have their very own interesting things that we will deal with.